host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey PDO Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me is my good buddy Chris Meany. Chris, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on, Dmitry? Happy to be here, man. You know, it's an exciting time of the season for the NHL and Thanksgiving in the States. It's a good, I think, sample size that we have to break down some players and some teams and maybe take a look at some outliers.
It is. We've got about 20 games or so for most teams, which is a nice little cutoff here for us to try to make sense of the sample sizes we've got. So the plan today, we're going to hopefully provide the listeners with some actionable information for their hockey pools, players to target, situations to buy on, kind of stuff to be wary of, all that good stuff. So hopefully those of you listening that do play in a hockey pool, you're going to get a little bit of an edge here. And maybe we'll even help you identify some shiny new toys that you can go and grab in your pool and then brag to your league mates about how smart you are. And then, of course, let them know where you found out that information so they come and listen to the show as well. So, Chris, as the guest, I'll give you the floor here. You can take this any number of directions you want. Give me a name. Give me a team. Give me something that you're really keying in on these days for what you want to target.
Well, I'm going to give you, I think, just maybe the biggest buy low candidate in fantasy hockey right now. And it's, in my opinion, Kyle Connor. When I take a look at Kyle Connor as a proven goal scorer, and these are questions that I'm getting lately from some fantasy hockey players, what do they do with Kyle Connor? I thought he was going to score 40. I mean, he's been flirting with 40 the past couple of years. What's happening with Kyle Connor? Is there anything different in his game this year compared to last year? And I don't see a whole lot, Dmitry. I mean, this season, I take a look at his 5-5 numbers according to Natural Stat Trick. He's 7th in expected goals at 5-5. But he only has 3 goals. He's shooting 7%. He's 5th in scoring chances. Last year, he was top 20 in expected goals. He had 28 goals. He shot 14%. I know a lot of his production over the past couple of years has come on that power play. But this is still a guy that, when I look at the scoring chances and the high danger chances, he checks a lot of the boxes for me. So when I take a look at the elite scorers in the NHL and who is not putting the puck in the net, it's kind of Kyle Connor. And I think the window is closing. Like, he's starting to fill the net lately. You're starting to see some of those pucks go in. So I just feel like now is the opportunity to go and get this guy if you're looking for a big buy low.
Yeah. This is our prototypical or like classic buy low, right? Where you look under the hood and you look at all of the rate stats and all of his shot metrics look identical. In fact, he's generating significantly more high danger chances than he used to. We know he's a proven goal scorer. Really, it seems like the only thing that dragging him down right now is that shooting percentage. And so that's where you want to capitalize on the track record and expecting him to bounce back. He's been one of those players historically where you're looking at his shooting percentages year over year since he became a regular in the NHL. He's 16.2, 15, 15.9, 15.7, 14.8 last year. He's under 9 right now. He's proven year over year that he's not only an above average, but an elite finisher in terms of efficiency, and he's got the shot rate as well. So it seems like a no-brainer that the goals will come. I guess the only potential concern is when there's a coaching change like this, and we know Rick Bonus generally has had a bit of an offensive drag on his players in terms of the system they play and kind of the pace they play at. But it's not like it was an ideal situation for the Jets last year by any means in terms of the way they were playing. Kyle Connor still feasted there, and we've seen that top line of Jason Roberts and Rupe Hintz and Joe Pavelski thrive under Rick Bonus as well. So it's not much of a concern for me. I guess that'll be the only kind of like what's different this year, but in terms of the numbers, it seems like nothing's popping up.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, Nikolai Ehlers, you know, helps that power play out, but I just saw this morning he's going to be sidelined for the next 6 weeks at least. So he's going to miss a lot of it. It's a lot of time. So, you know, you get seeing other guys step up maybe offensively, but Kyle Connor to me, is that guy. And man, you mentioned Jason Robertson. I don't think anybody's buying low on Jason Robertson, and nobody should sell high on Jason Robertson either, because he's continuing to just light the world on fire. It's phenomenal to watch that guy play hockey.
Well, actually, we should have started with this question, but it ties into this because Kyle Connor was a great example of this. So it's a listener question from Jay Cotton, who asks, what advanced stats are relevant to fantasy hockey? What metrics should I be looking at to help predict future success? What metrics are unreliable? It's funny because you and I, you know, you do fantasy football as well. And this year in particular, I've like that, like I jumped headfirst into it. I'm playing in a couple leagues and taking it very seriously. And there I'm looking at stuff like yards per route run and completion rate over expected and all. Like, it's just the stats are just getting crazier and crazier in terms of like how you can really narrow down what each player is doing. In fantasy hockey, it's certainly a bit more rudimentary, but I do still feel like there's just having a like a basic understanding of percentages will give you such a leg up to prevent kind of irrational panicking about star players when they're not producing, or you know, getting overly excited about some one shot, one hit wonder that's kind of come out of the gate strong, and not necessarily just, you know, prioritizing that over everything else. So I think just understanding percentages in terms of both individual and on ice, and kind of what the baselines are for those positions, and expecting everything to come back to normal eventually, will give you like a big edge over all of your league mates.
Yeah, it's great advice, and is a really good question. I take a look at those percentages as well, shooting percentages. I like to look at 5-on-5 numbers in particular. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, players that are going to get opportunity on power plays, and sometimes that could be a little skewed. Like Chris Kreider, a ton of his goals, I think half of his goals last season in the NHL came on the power play. Is that sustainable? You know, if the power play struggles, and you're starting to see it, right? I mean, he was having some issues as well. He's dropped down to the fourth line. He was benched a little bit. He's back up with Mika, and it seems like they're clicking again. But yeah, expected goals, taking a look at players at 5-on-5, like another guy here, like we're not breaking any news. You're not going to be able to get Auston Matthews in any of your leagues, right? But you know, this season, second in expected goals behind Timo Meier, second in scoring chances, 3 goals this season at 5-on-5, shooting 5%, 10.8 shots per 60 minutes, it ranks 21st in the NHL. Last year, first in expected goals, first in goals at 5-on-5 with 38. He shot 15%. He was third in the NHL in shots per 60 minutes. So a lot of those other, like basically all those numbers that I gave you are very similar, except for his shooting percentage. His shooting percentage and the pucks not finding the back of the net. But it's not like the shot attempts aren't there. It's not like he's not generating any scoring chances. Again, this is arguably the best scorer in the NHL. So I'm not breaking any news here, but taking a look at just those percentages and just seeing, are the chances there? If the chances are there, then we should be concerned. And I'm sure there's going to be a couple players definitely that I'd like to bring up with you and get your thoughts. But for Matthews and Kyle Connor, like these are still elite goal scorers. And, you know, we're going to see some regression the other way, I think, in the second half.
Yeah, if either the individual player himself changed the way they're playing for whatever reason, whether they're hurt, not 100%, or whether, you know, they're just playing with different players, or the situation around them is different, that's when you kind of need to recalibrate. But if everything under the hood otherwise looks very similar, you kind of want to bet on the track record. I've got actual numbers here for last year's averages. So last year's average for on-ice shooting percentage at 5-on-5, which is not just the shots you're taking, but everyone around you when you're on the ice, was 8.4%, which is a number to remember. Individual shooting percentage for forwards was 11.8, for defensemen 4.9, or whatever. The reason why I bring that up is because I think you can make a lot of money over time just betting on outliers to eventually come back to that norm, right? Like we always want to talk to ourselves into, oh no, this player is different. Like he's going to be an outlier. And then they may for a year or two or for half a season or whatever, but eventually we're going to see people either keep coming back down or going back up, depending on where they've been at. And so just kind of betting on that, stabilizing, normalizing is generally a good practice. Now, elite players are generally going to be a bit higher, and we'd expect higher baselines for them. So keep that in mind. But the reason why I bring that up is, and it pains me to say this because I love watching them play, I know you're high on them as well, but this seems like a pretty good time to sell high on Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially Nick Suzuki. And I am high on them. And when they hop over the boards, these guys really generate a lot of offense, and they're playing really, really good hockey. But I was looking at shooting percentage, and I had them ticked off. I mean, both of these guys, right? I mean, Cole Caulfield, so far this season, I mean, 15.69% shooting rate, but that's not nearly as high as Nick Suzuki. And Nick Suzuki's not even a guy who really likes to shoot the puck. I mean, he's a pass-first player. I'd like to personally see him shoot the puck a little bit more. But he is among the leaders this season in shooting percentage. I mean, 29%, Dmitry, at 5-on-5. I mean, 7 goals is pretty significant. Other guys above him on that list don't really get the ice time, like Alex Killorn, David Krejci. These guys, you know, they're going to their skill levels not quite the same as Nick Suzuki's, but absolutely agree with you. You know, goals are hard to come by, so I could be hesitant maybe to not sell Cole Caulfield. But what is this a 60 pace guy? I don't think so. I mean, what he's doing with Martin St. Louis is ridiculous. I think he's got 34 35 goals in 56 or 57 games with St. Louis behind the bench. So I'm always a little hesitant to sell that, you know, that trigger man, but for Suzuki as a pass first guy, he's not going to be able to keep this up. And I don't think anybody agrees that he's not going to finish as a top 10 scorer in the NHL. He's a nice player, but yeah, he's a good sell high candidate.
Yeah. Caulfield's different because his shot rate in particular is so high that like he's shooting whatever 16%, as you mentioned, which is slightly elevated, nothing outrageous by any means, but he's getting so many good looks and he's firing the puck so frequently himself that even if the shooting percentage does come down over a couple of weeks, he's got the volume to like not just completely go dry, right? Like the goals will still keep coming for him. For Suzuki, the 26% shooting percentage, all situations, 16.4% of shots at 5-on-5 for the Habs are going in with him on the ice. Like that's not a skill. That is pure variance, right? Like it's gonna come down, trust me. And so I get you get attached to players, and you know, especially if you drafted someone like Suzuki later in your draft or whatever, and now you're seeing the success, you're probably feeling pretty smart and you're like, yeah, like I got a gem here and certainly a good player. And if you know, if other league mates in your league are aware of this and you're not actually just being able to sell high on him, they're aware that he's probably going to come down, and so they're paying you accordingly. You don't need to panic and sell low by any means, but this is just something like, if someone wants to look just at his point totals, feel free to sell, because I don't think it's going to continue.
And people are trying to pull a fast one on me too. Yeah, for those that know me, they know I like to watch Blue Blanc Rouge quite often. But yeah, they're trying to pull a fast one on me. Hey, you know, I got a lot of Tage Thompson or Jack Hughes, and you know, trying to do that one for one center trade, and there's just no chance. You know, speaking of Tage Thompson, he's a guy that I wouldn't sell high. But yeah, Nick Suzuki gave the numbers there, is pretty spectacular when he's on the ice and pucks are going in. That's just that's a lot of puck luck for sure.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Thompson. I had him on my list of do not sell. In fact, if I think maybe there's someone in your league that might own Tage Thompson that feels like he's getting lucky or just riding the hot hand, and so they might actually be thinking they're selling high, and in reality, I would buy high on him in that instance, because yeah. I think this is totally legit, right? Only Timo Meier and David Pastrnak have more shots than him this season. Only McDavid, Horvat, and Jason Robertson have more goals. And just watching him, I mean, is there anyone more unique in today's game than him? Like, clearly Connor McDavid, in terms of how fast he can operate and how quickly he can do stuff, is incredible and unparalleled. But Thompson, like with that wingspan and like the toe drags he's doing the other night, obliterated the Habs all night. Like, it was a one-man show. There was a penalty kill shift where he was just terrorizing Michael Matheson, and he got like two or three scoring chances, and it felt like it was a 1-on-5, and it almost was, and it didn't matter because he was the one. And Tage Thompson is so cool and so fun. And so I would be buying him if anyone in your league is thinking that this can't continue for whatever reason.
I'm laughing because he's a freak, man. Yeah. He really is. For somebody that's 6'7", 220, to move up and down the ice the way that he does, and the hands that he has in tight, and you know, a rare power forward in today's game that has hands and speed. He's playing in all situations. He's getting a little bit of a boost in ice time. And I know you tweeted out recently, but you know, last night was a little bit of a dud game for him against his former squad in the Blues. But before that, it was a 6-game sample size where he had over 40 shots and he was averaging 10.5 shot attempts per game. And he has 3 or 4 rushes where he just takes a defender, toe drags, like you said, or goes out wide with that height and that reach that he has. He's not afraid to shoot the puck. And there's a lot of chemistry between him, Alex Tuch, and Jeff Skinner as well. So, yeah, hold. And if somebody wants to sell, I think you said it perfectly. Go ahead. Buy. Buy high if you want. I don't think you'll regret it.
Well, I know you're big on the shot props. Last 14 games, here is shot attempt totals. 5, 13, 11, 7, 12, 6, 16, 7, 5, 6, 4, 14, 14, 12. Just preposterous volume. And you're right. The most recent game against the Blues, and those beautiful throwback jerseys they were wearing. The 5 shot attempts only, which is a disappointment by his standards. 2 of those were like unreal highlight reel moves that he made leading up to them that easily could have been goals. And so it's like, it's every night he seems to be just doing something ridiculous that's highlight reel worthy. So buy on Tage Thompson. Who's next on your list?
So I have a player on my list that I don't even know if I'm into buying this guy, but I know the opportunity is there. And you mentioned shot props at the start of the season, 3.5 shot props every single night for Alex DeBrincat. It's the first time I saw him last night. I know it was, you know, partly because it was in Vegas against the Golden Knights and they're playing pretty good hockey, but DeBrincat was at 2.5 shots. So taking a look at him again, some of his 5-on-5 numbers, 2 goals at 5-on-5, he's shooting 4%. He's 16th in shots per 60 minutes, 11 per. And last year, of course, this is a player in a new scenario, a new situation, new coaches, new players to adapt. He's been up and down the lineup. He's on the second power play. You know, now he's playing with Giroux and Broussard. And last week he was up on the first line. So they're really trying to figure out, I know the Sens aren't playing great hockey, but they are among the leaders in terms of like, you know, shot attempts at 5-on-5. They're generating some chances, but they're not getting anything really from DeBrincat. 18 goals at 5-on-5 last season, shot 10%. 8.5 shots per 60 minutes. So fewer shots per 60 minutes last year than this year. But again, you lose a guy like Patrick Kane. You're trying to find your footing with certain players. But I don't know if I'm totally in on buying him, but I'm checking in on the owners and seeing what the price is, because he's absolutely available. And this is a player that a lot of people touted at the start of this season as maybe flirting with, you know, winning the Rocket and another 40 goal season. Everybody seemed to like the Sens. They're flashy, made some moves in the offseason. I don't even know if he's going to be a member of the Sens in 3 months. I don't know if they decide to just move on from this guy. I know they traded some assets, but he's a guy that I don't know. I have a lot of questions. Maybe you got some answers for me.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, you're looking at the teammates he's played with, right? They really haven't been able to find the right combination for him. And I think part of that is just unfortunate that Josh Norris got hurt early in the season, because I feel like that would have been a natural fit. I know Norris is more of a trigger man himself and not necessarily a playmaker who would get the brink at the puck, but just would have been a highly skilled player to play off of with him. And they looked really good in the 50 or so minutes they played together. Since then, I mean, his most common line mate is Claude Giroux, who at this point of his career, I don't necessarily think is going to drive massive results. And then the second most common line mate is Derek Brassard. Like, that's just not, going from playing with Patrick Kane, whose like one main job on the ice was to serve the puck up to him on a silver platter for high danger opportunities, to that is quite a bit of a downgrade. I will say, yeah, you're right. All of the underlying metrics in terms of the generation checks out. I still think he's a very talented player in the prime of his career. And I will say, like, if you just take a step back and look at it from a team perspective, I think no team has been more unlucky than the Senators in terms of like losing all these weird one goal games and just not being able to get anything going this season so far. And so I think eventually that luck just in general will turn. And I feel like the goals will start to come. And when they potentially do, they'll come in bunches for DeBrincat. So I'd be wary of panicking and selling him at this point, but I'm not necessarily kind of running out there and trying to pay a premium price for him. If you can get him at a discount, for sure, because his track record of scoring goals is so exciting and so hard to come by in today's game. But I don't know. There's enough red flags here where I'm a little bit concerned.
Like, I would sell Gabriel Vilardi for him. Mm-hmm. He's a trendy player that a lot of people picked up, and you know, a few questions about Vilardi. A nice little player, right? I mean, it looks like he's breaking out this season. He's got a nice shot, heavy shot, and he's up on the top line for the Kings a little bit. And they got Fiala back up there now, but he's a player. He's got 7 goals at 5-5, and you know, 20% shooting rate. It's a player that I don't think you can flip one for one. It may be like him and, you know, a piece, a hot defenseman that maybe you picked up that you wanted to flip, and you're okay at D. I could see that move happening. Like, he's a sell high candidate that I would consider.
I like that. Well, speaking of the Kings, here's a guy that I think he's owned in less than half of Yahoo League, so you can probably still just get him off the waiver wire. I know I've picked him up in my leagues. Trevor Moore. So this line of Trevor Moore, Victor Arvidsson, and Philip Danault is one of my favorite lines in the league, and not necessarily the most glamorous line, right? There's still more of a, you know, a kind of like a two-way checking line. They're not going to score huge point totals, but they've played 220 minutes together at 5-on-5. They're dominating in those minutes. And Trevor Moore in particular, his usage has gone up from, he was playing 15:41 per game last year. He's up to 18 minutes now. He's actually fourth most on the Kings amongst forwards. He's playing more than Kevin Fiala, which is a bit surprising, I think, to people. His power play usage has gone up significantly. And, you know, he's on pace for like 22 goals, 60 points, won't blow you away. But with that ice time that he's added to his resume and 265 shots he's on pace for this season, which is 22nd most as well. So he's one of those guys where every night I look and I notice he's got 4 shots on goal or whatever. So he'd be like a guy, if I was playing shot props, that I would be all over. But I just think in terms of how much they're using that line, how featured he is in the offense, he's someone who you can probably get for nothing that could sneakily give you value, especially if you play in leagues that count shots, ice time, and all that good stuff.
Oh, I love it, Dimitri. Yeah, he's on my short list here. I was going to bring him up a little bit later on. You mentioned the ice time, the boost that he's had. That line plays really good, and they played really good last year too. There was a stretch where they're one of the best lines in the NHL of 5-5 last mm-hmm. season, and it was a stretch of almost 2 months. Yeah, you mentioned shot props. He's cleared in 15 of his 22 games this season, and he's usually 2.5. I mean, books are adjusting. You know, you're not going to get plus money for a lot of players these days, but he was one that you were getting plus money from. And this guy had 4 shots in 4 straight games for him. He had a hat trick the other night. Philip Deneau's a very smart hockey player. Obviously, we all know about his defensive game, but last year he had a career season offensively. He was given opportunity on the power play. And, you know, they keep that line together at 5-5, and they keep them together on the power play as well, which I think correlates well if you're, you know, you're playing a little DFS, you're looking for shot props and things like that. So, yeah, it's a great call. Kempe's on that list for me, too. Yep. Just a short list, but, you know, a hot start. I don't think he's, you know, a 40-goal scorer, which, you know, he flirted with last year. I think, you know, when we look back, maybe last season is the outlier from him. But, you know, 7 goals, 12 points in 22 games. And again, a lot of that came in the first, you know, month of the season, first few games of the season. But 11th in shot attempts at 5-5 over the last month. Like, they're still there. But it doesn't seem like, Dimitri, you mentioned Fiala's ice time versus Moore's ice time. Fiala's on the third line. He's on the first line. I don't think they're ever going to split up that second line. But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of chemistry when I watch Kempe, Kopitar, and Fiala, but I think that, you know, over time they could figure it out.
Yeah, it's one of those things that sounds good on paper, but then you realize that Kempe and Fiala both ideally want to shoot whenever they get the puck, and then it's like, oh, this is not the most natural fit. And yeah, I think there's a bit of a stylistic clash there. I'm kind of curious, you know, just speaking on the shot props, do you feel like they adjust quickly enough to this stuff? Like, when guys, like, kind of surprisingly, especially Trevor Moore, for example, you mentioned that he's beaten his total 15 out of 22 times. Like, do you feel like there's still a bit of an inefficiency there where you can target it? Or do you feel like generally they're pretty aware in terms of, like, what the usage is happening? And if a guy all of a sudden his situation changes, they're bumping it up to you know, 3.5 or whatever, or changing the VIG?
I think it takes a little bit of time. I mean, I'm really seeing adjustments quicker this season compared to the past couple of years. I mean, I've been doing this for the past couple of years, and 2 years ago when I started at FTN, it was the first time that I ever really tracked shot props and bets. We have a bet tracker over there, and it took them forever. Like, Nathan McKinnon and Mikko Rantanen were at 2.5 plus money for the first 2 months. Kyle Connor, it was like, holy crap. Like, it seemed like they didn't understand it. And now with big name players, you're really starting, like, Cole Caulfield, Tage Thompson, Timo Meier, all these guys are now juiced heavily. But a guy like Trevor Moore, who's on the second line, a guy like Owen Tippett, who jumped up the lineup in Philadelphia, who's on the first line. The books are not really adjusting to those type of players. Carter Verhaeghe is another example, especially when Matthew Tkachuk was out of the lineup. Carter Verhaeghe having a really good season for the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. Last year, he was great too. There was multiple games, I think a span of 8 of 10, where he had at least 4 shots on goal, and he was 2.5 plus money throughout that entire time. And then I think, you know, over, you know, I guess a span of him doing it consistently, now I saw him last night in what was a tougher spot against the Bruins at plus money again, 2.5. Mm-hmm. So I think Bucks are adjusting on the big players, but, you know, you bring up a Trevor Moore, you bring up a sneaky little second liner who's getting a little bit of power play time. Maybe he's quarterbacking the second power play unit or something like that. Books are a little bit slower to adjust, but shot props are getting tricky these days. A lot of these players are heavily juiced. You got to put them into maybe a 2-leg or a 3-leg parlay, which obviously decreases your chances of winning. But still, I think what the value is maybe, like, just having guys get points or assists in terms of props. But to answer your original question, we are seeing a little bit of adjustment, but it's not on those lower key names.
Well, here's another similar profile to that. And unfortunately, he got hurt last night against the Canucks. So monitor his status. It didn't look good. I couldn't tell if he got slashed on his leg or if he stepped on a stick awkwardly. Like, his leg was clearly in rough shape. But Evan Rodriguez, who prior to that injury was playing 18.35 per game, which is only behind Nathan McKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and Arturi Lehkonen on the Avalanche, on pace for 30 plus goals, 200 plus shots. And he was really benefiting from the injuries that they had up front, right? Missing Gabriel Landeskog all year, Valeri Nichushkin going out. He was essentially becoming like the second or third option on their power play one, which is one of the most devastating units in the league, where if Cale Makar didn't have the point shot, or if Nathan McKinnon didn't have that one timer, they were looking to get it to Evan Rodriguez, or he, every time he would get the puck, he would just, you know, shoot it on net because that's what he likes to do. And so I love that spot for him. And he's a perfect example of that, where he was like a second liner on the Avalanche, but in a prime scoring position, and he was benefiting from it. So hopefully his injury is not too bad and he can come back, because I feel like he's a guy that you could probably get for nothing as well, and can give you sneaky good production.
Here's another guy we talk about. You're checking all my boxes here.
There we go.
Players that are like low key and plus money for your shot props and things like that. He has the Kadri role. Like, he's not going to put up Kadri numbers, but he has that Nazem Kadri role from last year as the second line center, and the Avs are going to get healthier you know, eventually, and you know, like to see some of these kids maybe that he's playing with. That his line mates have been different almost every single game, but the fact that he is on that first power play and he's getting an opportunity, and you're right, he loves to shoot the puck. There is a lot of times last season where he was on my radar with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Of course, they were deeper down the middle, but you know, there was some times where he was on the wing with either Crosby or Malkin or getting some power play time when they were depleted. But yeah, he it's not a shot that he doesn't like to take. EY says it all the time when it comes to some of these players. And yeah, you know, he loves to shoot the puck. And that's something that we like, right? We're trying to target, you know, if the goals are not going to come, at least, you know, these guys aren't going to give you zeros in your fantasy hockey league. If you're in a points league and you put up three or four shots on net, maybe get some power play assists, you walk away with a little something, as opposed to some players like pass first guys like Jonathan Huberdeau. What's Jonathan Huberdeau doing for you these days? Like, you know what I mean? So you get a shot volume guy in there. That's a really good call.
Yeah, I love that. All right, Chris, we're going to take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we're going to keep talking about fantasy hockey and hopefully helping our listeners out. So you are listening to the Hockey PDOcast streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here on the Hockey PDOcast with Chris Meany talking about fantasy hockey. Chris, you said you wanted to give me the most random player. Go for it.
I do. I was watching again last night and I was thinking to myself, is William Carrier good? Is he a great player? I don't think so. Is he a fantasy asset for people in deeper leagues that play in hits and shots? Maybe. Now, 7 goals in the season. They've all been 5-5. I don't even think he gets any power play. I've never seen him on the second power play unit at all, even when the Golden Knights are depleted. 4 goals in his last 4. I mentioned he's checking some boxes for hits and shots for those that play in banger leagues. He's 15th in expected goals for. He's 4th in high danger chances for at 5-5 with 34. Hyman 1, Meyer 2, Thompson 3, Carey 4. Mm-hmm. Matthews 5. I don't think like he deserves to be in that conversation with those people, Dmitry, but he's a guy that's that I notice every single night when I watch the Golden Knights play.
Yeah, remarkable. 34 high danger chances at 5-on-5, which actually leads the team. We have a running joke where like he's basically Connor McDavid except with absolutely zero hands. Like sometimes when you watch him rush the puck up the ice, you're like, oh my god, this guy's brilliant, and then he just doesn't do the actual part that winds up getting the puck into the net. But scored that highlight reel goal against the Senators last night, and has been doing so. I mean, listen, he's been around for a while, and I believe his career high for a season is 9, and he's already at 7. So it's one of those things where I think it's a cool story. I think the Golden Knights will certainly take every single one of these goals and run with it and not ask questions. But I wouldn't necessarily be expecting him to keep up this 7 goal for every 20 game pace or even half of that. But yeah, I mean, listen, if you play in a super deep league and you do get credit for stuff like shots and hits and all that, like you could do a lot worse than that, especially while he's riding hot. Like this is one of those situations where he's certainly on your waiver wire, so you can just pick him up for free, stream him for a couple games. And if he comes back down to earth, just drop him and you're not necessarily risking anything. I'm totally fine with that. You could do a lot worse, especially I haven't looked at their schedule, but if they have, you know, a week coming up where there's a bunch of games on or whatever, and you play in a head to head, that's totally fine. But yeah, no, it's a fun player and a fun story, but certainly one of those situations where it's like, this seems like it's very out of the norm for what we've come to expect from this player.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of tongue in cheek there. But yeah, it's when you just look at some of these players and you look at some of the metrics that we're talking about here throughout the show, it's just like one of those players that just does not seem to fit in with the grouping that he's in right now. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, one of those where it's good to have like a familiarity with the sport and context, because if you're running just purely like a numbers based model without any sort of track record or history or knowledge of the names, you'd be like, wow, this passes all this checks every single box I'm looking for. Sign me up. But there's a bit more to it than that. Okay, let's talk about the Panthers, because you mentioned Carter Verhaeghe there in passing before we went to break, and I think they're a team to target in general. You're probably like Matthew Tkachuk has been immune to this. Sasha Barkov, for the most part, in terms of points, has been fine. So you're not necessarily getting those guys for cheap. But I just think as a whole, if there's someone in your league that's worried about, you know, they bought high on, or they drafted Panthers really high based on how they played as a team last year and is disappointed or doesn't like what they're seeing so far, I think that's a situation to target, because They're 31st in team shooting percentage after being fourth last year. Now, last year, they were first in high danger chances, first in shots for, first in expected goals, and first in goals scored. They basically like redefined what modern offense looks like in today's game, right? They're better in every one of those categories this season, except for goals scored, where they're down to 10th because of that decreased shooting percentage. And so I don't think they're necessarily going to shoot 11% like they did last year as a team. I think it's probably somewhere in between. But I feel like there's a level higher to hit for pretty much all of these top names in the team that have been underperforming a little bit so far, just based on expectations from last year. And so if you could jump on that and pounce on that and target that, I would be all for it.
Yeah, and I think there's two names in particular. I mean, again, if you're in a bangers league, Sam Bennett does at least provide something for you. I mean, he is among the leaders in terms of points per game, like in a point setting, if you are playing with hits, of course. He's always throwing his body around, and he's shooting. I'm pretty sure he's 19th in expected goals at 5-5. You know, he's right around that range in terms of shot attempts as well. I think the biggest name, though, the one that I would be interested in grabbing would be Sam Reinhart. Mm-hmm. 6 goals and 10 points. He's averaging 2 more minutes per game this season. He's a 6-time 20-goal scorer. 6 of the last 7 years, he's had 20 goals. Now, he had 33 last season, and you talked about the shooting percentage from last year, and, you know, maybe it evens out, and we're starting to see that. But I still view him as a 20-goal scorer, maybe even a 25-goal scorer, 10% shooting rate, 14% for his career. Yeah, this is still a team that generates a lot of offense, a great one for them last night to slow down the Bees at home. And that's in particular where they thrive at home. They play in a lot of like high tempo games. They're always like, I always see them after the first period. It's like, really? 25 shots and 38 attempts in the first period. Oh my goodness. Only one goal, but it does seem like the chances are there every single night for this squad. So those are two players I take a look at, more so Reinhart than Bennett, but it depends on your scoring setting.
I really wish we could combine Sam Reinhart and Carter Verhaeghe into one fantasy asset, right? Because Reinhart is kind of lost in the shuffle at 5-on-5 because they've been loading up that Tkachuk, Barkov, Herbert, Higgy line, and understandably so, they've been right up there as one of the best 5-on-5 lines in the league. Now, Reinhart, a lot of last year, most of his success actually came with Anton Lundell and Mason Marchment on like what was their third line, essentially. They had immense efficiency that you probably wouldn't expect to continue regardless, but I think he's shown that he can produce even if he's not necessarily playing with Barkov or on the top line at 5-on-5. He's actually their most used player on the power play, and that's where pretty much all of his production has come so far. At 5-on-5, he's got 1 goal on 60 shot attempts, and the team has a sub 4% shooting percentage with him on the ice, so both of those are going to come up quite a bit, and when that regression hits for the Panthers, he will probably be the biggest beneficiary. So I think he's a great player to target. For Hagee's kind of the opposite, where because they run that 3-forward, 2-defenseman set on the power play now with Montour and Ekblad back there, Verhaeghe's not really going to get that top power play ice time. He's going to have to do most of his damage at 5-on-5. Luckily, as you mentioned, he's one of the best 5-on-5 producers in the league in terms of shot volume, in terms of scoring. So I like both those guys quite a bit. And I would definitely, if you're getting an antsy league member that's like, oh man, this Panthers team just isn't what I thought they'd be this year after the changes they made this offseason, go and buy, because they might not replicate last year's offensive success, but I think the goals are going to start coming. And you know, that 5-goal output or whatever they had against Boston last night, I think that's going to become much more of the norm than the 1 or 2 goals that we've been seeing from them lately.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they check a lot of boxes as a team at 5-on-5, right? The shot attempts are always there. The high danger chances too. I mean, they're top 5 in high danger chances created at 5-on-5 per 60. So yeah, there's a lot of guys up and down that lineup that I think will, you know, now that Ekblad is back too, you know, Montour's had a great start of the season. He was filling mm-hmm. in really nicely when Ekblad was sidelined. But having Ekblad, you know, on that power play, I think will create a lot of offense there as well.
Here's my next question for you. How do we capitalize on this supernova that is the New Jersey Devils? Because
oh my goodness,
you're not going to get Jack Hughes or Jesper Bratt or even Nico Hischier or Dougie Hamilton at this point. I feel like their owner is probably going to be pretty happy with what they're getting from them and was not going to want to part with that. Luckily, you know, I think you and our pal Cam Robinson at the start of last year, we did like a full preview of the fantasy hockey season. We did like a 20-minute segment where we were like, we're buying Jack Hughes as the next superstar in the league, and especially the type of player where you want to get whoever is even tangentially related to him in terms of ice time, because he's going to make all of them so much better. And at the time, we were like Igor Sharangovich, maybe potentially Alexander Holtz. We were trying to figure out who was going to ride shotgun with him. Now, because Jesper Brad is playing with him, it's tough because you're not going to get that player for cheap. But we've seen Erik Haula cycle in there, and his shot volume has been remarkable. And he's probably been one of the most snake-bitten players in the league that I've seen. Like, I think he's either hit the post or had, like, a puck on the goal line get knocked away before just before going in, like, at least a handful of times so far this season. So maybe you can look at him, maybe Fabian Zetterlund or Dawson Mercer, because those guys are kind of cycling on that Hischier line. How are we targeting this? Because I think there's enough offense there that you can get some of these tangential pieces and still get great production from them for cheap, but trying to figure out who it's going to be is kind of tricky.
Yeah, it really is tricky. When I look at this team on paper, I really am surprised that they're where they're at. But when I watch them play, it's like, well, okay, they are really good. They roll four lines. They can come at you in waves. They have great defensive players as well. They are solid in their own net, and you know, in their own end, they got good sticks. Erik Haula, I noticed the same thing. Every time I watch the Devils, I mean, Jack Hughes and Jesper Bratt create something almost every single time they hop over the boards. And whether it's Erik Haula or Igor Sharangovich, those guys are getting opportunities. And you mentioned Haula, maybe snake bit. And I think that's the guy that I'm probably most interested in. I mean, he does have a little bit of a track record. He's not going to go and do what he did a couple years ago in his first season with the Golden Knights and things like that. But he is a guy that I feel like next to Hughes and next to both of those guys, I do believe are pass first players, even though Jack Hughes is among the leaders in shot attempts. I still feel like he's a guy that looks to set up somebody before he shoots the puck. So like a guy like Haula, and Brad's the same way. Like Brad is a pass first player as well. I think that Sharangovich may have the highest goal ceiling between him and maybe Zetterlund, who's playing on that first line with Tatar and Hischier, compared to Erik Haula. But it just doesn't seem like there's consistency with him. Like he scored the other night, I think in Toronto, overtime winner. And it's like, oh, this guy's maybe going to stick here for a couple games. And then, you know, they went away from it. So in deeper formats, I would probably look at Haula. You know, even in 12 team leagues, if you're streaming, I think the Devils are one of the teams that play, no, they have three games next week. I thought they had four, but even still, you know, if your league is deep enough, I think you just, like you said, piggyback off of that. I think Jack Hughes is a future 100 point player. I don't know if we see it as early as this season, but I think he's a superstar in the league and there's no question about it.
Oh, I think that's the baseline. I'd say future 120 point player. Like he's going to erupt if he hasn't already.
Are they cup contenders in your opinion, to jump in on you?
I actually heard you get
Stanley Cup contenders.
I heard you and our pal Eric Young talking about this on one of your recent shows. I think so. Like I certainly if you got the preseason odds or whatever they were at 60-1 or 50-1 or whatever absurd total it was, like you're loving that. I'm not sure what their current price is. You probably don't want to buy high after a 13 game winning streak regardless. Maybe could wait for that to come down a little bit. I'm not sure entirely about cup contender just purely because there's some other teams that I might like a little bit more, but if you're factoring in the value as well, I think there's a range of outcomes where they could certainly be among that short list of teams, right? Like I think they're totally legit in terms of the way they play. Like you look at the depth, you look at the skating, you look at the philosophy of how they, when they're holding leads, they're still playing aggressively. They're constantly pursuing the puck. They turn on these stretches for 10, 15 minutes every single night, seemingly, where the other team just gets like suffocated and bottled up and can't even complete a pass because they're just all over them. And I think that's here to stay. Like that's not some sort of a fluke where they're just riding a hot hand. So they're going to start losing some games, but I think they're totally legit. I think they're one of the best teams that I've watched this season. And so, yeah, I'm more so leaning towards buying them than not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think 17-1 right now, but in some spots. But yeah, I would agree. I mean, I didn't buy in at the start of the season. It was mostly because of goaltending. It was not because of the kids, right? The kids offensively. I saw Nico Hischier play in Halifax here for a couple of years, and you could definitely see it's nice to see him, you know, fully put it all together here. He's staying healthy, and he's a really nice player. They're deep down the middle, right, when you include Mercer in there as well. So, yeah, it's a team that's playing pretty good hockey, and when you have a 13-game winning streak like that, you pretty much punch your ticket in the playoffs no matter what happens.
And here's the thing. I'm not sure if it can necessarily continue, but as they're playing right now, you or I could be their goalie, and they probably still win a lot of games because they're just like they're not giving anything up, right? They're like literally the best defensive team in terms of every single metric, and also one of, if not the best offensive team. So here's a question for you. This is for the true deep league degenerates. You mentioned William Carrier earlier. Can I interest you in a little Nathan Bastian?
Who was it? Sorry?
Nathan Bastian. So he is...
Oh, yeah. First power play last night, right?
First power play pretty much all year. Like he's been their net front guy. Yeah. And the on-off splits last I checked were actually like totally support that decision. You know, power plays are weird samples, so you don't necessarily know how much to buy into it, but certainly plays his role in front of the net there, mixes it up. throws a ton of hits, has actually gotten a pretty good chance of volume. And, you know, he's playing fourth line minutes, so you're not going to get that much at 5-on-5. But that line with like him, McLeod, and Wood is one of the most exciting fourth lines in the league in terms of just playing with pace and mixing it up. And they've been hot as well. So I think, you know, you could do a lot worse as well, similar to what we were saying about Carrier. I'm not expecting huge goal volume from him by any means, but just in terms of like, if you're scraping the bottom of the barrel, there's a guy that's pretty involved. And considering the offensive environment he's in, I think you could do a lot worse than trying to kind of get a little piece of action with that if he's one of the only guys available in your league.
I like that. That's a good call. It's a deep pull. EY would be proud of you for sure. He mentioned him the other day for an anytime goal scorer because of that opportunity. Yeah, that fourth line, I mean, Wood seems to create something every time he's on the ice as well. There's a couple random players like that that are getting first power play opportunity. Like Stefan Noesen is a guy that I'm not really totally in on, but he every single time I see the Hurricanes power play, maybe that's the reason why they don't score any goals. I don't know what you make of the Hurricanes, but I was taking a look at the top 10 teams and expected goals for, and then where they actually are in goals for 5-on-5, and the Hurricanes and the Rangers and the Leafs are three teams that are inside the top 10, but in expected goals, but they're not scoring. Like last night, again, Hurricanes dominate, ton of shot attempts, and they can't find a way to score. It seems like if Sveshnikov's not scoring, Martinez is nice. I think he's one of the players we chatted about last year as well with Cam. And he's having a real solid breakout campaign. Maybe the offense starts to come when Pacioretty gets into the lineup in the new year, potentially off that Achilles injury. But man, when they put Noesen on that power play and Seth Jarvis, I think a lot of people had expectations for it. It's a team that just, again, if Sveshnikov's not scoring, they're not scoring any goals. I can't really figure them out because they dominate play as well. They're really good defensively.
Yeah, they got shut out by Karel the Thrill of Emelka last night, who's been playing remarkably well in November. I believe he's been one of the best goalies in the league. Yeah, I would buy on Seth Jarvis, actually. If you look at his numbers last year when he kind of burst on the scene as a teenage rookie compared to now, a lot of those underlying metrics have actually gone up. He's being used more. He's generating more. He just hasn't scored at all. I think he's shooting like 7% himself. The team with him on the ice is around 6%. Both of those will go up. And he's so important to them as a creator. I know they've mixed and matched the lines because they've been understandably frustrated by how hard the offense has been to come by, but I think they still ultimately want to have him and Aho as the 1-2 punch on the top line. And so if you can get him, he might even be getting dropped in some leagues because he's only got like 3 goals and 7 points so far. He's someone who I think has the upside to build off of what he did last year, and once those goals start coming, he's going to benefit from them. But yeah, it's been pretty frustrating. It's been kind of a commitment to the bit by the Hurricanes in terms of getting a lot of shot volume but not being able to actually turn it into actual goals.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you on Seth Jarvis too. He's a guy that I have a lot of shares of. I'm hanging tight where I can. And you're right, he is getting dropped in some formats. He's a nice little player, and the opportunity is there for him. I feel like this team may look a little bit different when they get Pacioretty in there. I want to bring up UC Parsons into you as well, because EY keeps talking about him. We're seeing you know him getting a real opportunity in Nashville. Of course, EY is a big Preds guy, but
yep.
You know, I've really noticed him. I mean, his first NHL goal was, I don't want to say it was Tage Thompson-like, but you know, a big body who took it out wide and with a little bit of speed, looks like he's got some nice hands, and he cut it in and went hard to the net. I mean, he took a massive hit on that play as well and still put the puck in the back of the net. He's getting an opportunity to play with Nashville's best scorer and Philip Forsberg on that first line. Mikael Granlund's moved to the wing, and he's getting an opportunity to play on power plates too. And even I noticed, you know, with the game on the line the other night, it was a tie game. He's out there. You know, he's getting responsibility. It's not like it's like, oh, you know, he's a young kid or, you know, just a taste of the NHL. And we're going to kind of, you know, scale him back a little bit. Because actually, like, Habs do that with Caulfield, believe it or not. When they're up, yeah. When they're up a goal in the last 3 minutes of the game, he's actually not on the ice. I put Monahan on the ice with Nick Suzuki, who's another player, by the way, who's getting top power play time, is kind of producing. But yeah, Parsonen, what do you think about him? Is he maybe a deep league pull or somebody we should? I think he's somebody that, me myself, I have streamed him and ride this out maybe a little bit to see if he sticks on that top line. I think there's an opportunity for him.
Yeah, there is. I mean, listen, he is a rookie. He's only played 6 NHL games, but he produced pretty impressively the past 2 years in a pro league in Finland. And then he came over and started the year in the AHL and was basically a point per game player. And so they felt the need to promote him, and he's rewarded them for it. They're putting in a position to succeed, certainly. But I think he's averaging like 3 power play minutes per game so far this season. And he's riding shotgun, as you mentioned, with Forsberg at 5-on-5. So you could do a lot worse than that. He's what, he's shooting like 27% or something right now.
Yeah.
He's so that's not going to continue regardless of where he's getting his shots from. Now, listen, he's played six games. So when you score three goals in six games, those shooting percentage totals are going to be inflated. I'm not holding that as a knock against him. I think certainly passes the eye test. Like I like what I see in terms of how he uses his frame, taking the puck to the net and how they're using him. So yeah, if he's available, I would certainly take a shot on him, take a flyer, see if this continues. Cause if they're going to keep putting him in this role, the points are going to come, right? Like for this Predators team last year, they were highly efficient, but it made sense because their top players were so good with the puck. And then, you know, they go on the power play, they'd create all of a sudden. And so if he's going to be one of those guys, he's playing off of Duchesne and Forsberg and Granlund, and they're feeding him, the points are going to come. So I like that. That's a classic Eric Young pull there. And it makes sense that he'd be a player that he likes, but I like what I see. I'm very interested. He was on my list as like monitoring for the later, but if he keeps this up and you're simply kind of putting him on your watch list, you might miss out on him, right? So maybe it makes sense to stake a claim on him now. And then if he comes back down to earth, you can always drop him.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, it depends on your league and how deep your league is, of course, all about context. But yeah, as you mentioned, the ice time seems to be there. I mean, 18 minutes the other night, he's shooting. He's got at least two shots in four of his games. And you mentioned the alarming shooting percentage. Yeah, it's something to certainly monitor. But he's winning some faceoffs. He's throwing his body around, too, for those that are in banger leagues. He had six hits the other night against the Bolts. I thought it was actually a very impressive game from him.
I love it. All right. I think we've done a good job here. I think we've gotten through pretty good amount on my list. Let's do some plugs. So you got, I'm going to give you a couple minutes here because I know you've got so much to plug because you're doing a million different shows. Let the listeners know where they can check you out, what you're working on, give them all that good stuff, including the show you do with our pal Eric Young, who's one of my personal favorites.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Dimitri. Yeah, Eric Young is, when he tells you he's a fantasy hockey psycho, he truly is. I don't know where he finds the time. He's overseas and he's texting me at like 3 a.m. and saying, oh my goodness, that Arizona and Seattle game was fantastic. I can't believe it. I watched all of it and it was great. Yeah, Dangle Batselli is twice a week at 10 Eastern, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Those are the busy nights in the NHL. We just kind of roll through the games, have a little bit of a fantasy hockey spin, call some shot props, have some fun with some goals, and really just have a fun NHL conversation. Mean Streets is 5 days a week. It's a free show as well. Both of these shows are free on our YouTube channel, FTN Network. I tweet them all out at Chris Meany. It's a multi-sport show, obviously football, but this is a great time to be a sports fan. You got hockey, if you like NBA, you got the World Cup happening. We cover it all over at Mean Streets with some great guests and things like that. So yeah, appreciate you giving me the opportunity to plug my stuff. Love coming on with you, man. An absolute blast. Big fan of the podcast here and all my stuff over at FTN, whether it's a betting angle that you're looking for, a DFS, or you're just looking for some fun fantasy hockey talk or fantasy football talk, rankings, projections, weekly articles, all that stuff over at FTN, Fantasy FTN Daily and FTNBets.com.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you. I know it's a really busy time for you, so thank you for carving out some time in your schedule to come chat. Always a blast. Hopefully the listeners enjoyed it. I'd highly recommend checking out your work. We're certainly going to have you back on here later on in the season with another fantasy update. So stay tuned to that. If you enjoyed today's show, please go smash that 5-star button. We really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow with another mailbag. So thank you for listening to the Hockey PDOcast streaming here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.